Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Incomparable, number 696, December 2023.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Incomparable. I am your host, Jason Snell. It's a new year. We're looking back at the old year. We're going to talk about things we liked from 2023. That's the premise here. And then at the end, some listeners have sent in some of their favorite moments of 2023, and I'll play a few clips. Then we're done. We're going to keep it real simple this year, or last year, or whatever year this is. Anyway, let me introduce these wonderful panelists in the order they will tell us things they liked from last year, as selected by random.org. Random.org,
random.
We bring the random to you. All right, okay.
Bring the random.
Yeah, yes, we brought it to you, blah, blah.
Yes. Indeed, random.org. And here they are. And these are selected from our top 12, I think, panelists of the past year. Here they are. Moises Chuyon, again, in random order. Moises Chuyon, hello.
Hi. Oh, good. I'm first. I was completely ready, and this will go very well.
Excellent. Well, you've got the rest of the introduction to prepare. Chip Sutterth is also here. Hi, Chip.
Hi, Jason.
Hi, how are you?
I sensed a need for efficiency this time around, so I just wanted to say hi.
All right, that's great. Monty Ashley is also here. Monty, hello.
Hi, Jason. What year is this about?
2023.
Oh, God.
But your personal 2023. So if you discovered something from 1964 that you thought was awesome in 2023, that's fine.
Fine. Or say 1967.
Strangely specific, but yes.
Yeah.
And so let me introduce Dan Morin.
Sup.
Hey.
Yo.
How's it going?
It's going all right. I don't know why 1967 has anything to do with me, but sure. Yeah, let's do that.
Nope. Shelley Brisbane's also here. Hi, Shelley.
Hi.
Hi. You have a 2023 related catchphrase?
No, not anymore.
What about the Riz? I hear so much about the Riz. I hear about that. That's
forgot
a word.
To activate the Riz for ourselves.
Definite,
this year.
Definite Riz. Definite.
Yacht?
Yeah. Ahmed? Annette Weirstra also here. Hi, Annette.
Hey, I'm really excited to be on my first best of episode.
Welcome. Welcome. I've locked it down for you. I kicked
awesome.
The bums out trying to clean up this place.
Let me in instead. I feel honored.
Yeah. Just trying to class it up. Technically, Steve was invited. He just isn't here. And you heard him already because he can't stop himself because of 1967. It's David J. Lohr.
I like all y'all and I love our listeners.
Mm-hmm. All right, and that's it. And then I will tell you some things that I liked after David, and that's our list. So let us begin our celebration of things that we liked from 2023. That simple, things we liked. Asked everybody to do two or three things that they liked. Let's start with Moises.
All right. So I'm going to do these, and then you'd also mentioned that we could mention, like, if we had maybe a favorite episode, just dash it off.
I didn't actually. I think say that, no. But you can just blurt it out at the end as you yield the rest of your time to me. And I'll just remind everybody out there listening, if you forgot, last year, Moises chose all of soccer.
Yeah. So I've still got all that.
Honestly, this year you lived by it. So what do you have for this year?
Well, I'm going to go in a very different direction, though, to a place that loves soccer and, in fact, is where the term soccer came from, and that's the United Kingdom. Mm. I have become very fond of a show from the BBC And that's BBC One, the one BBC.
The one and only.
To Jason.
The only BBC there is.
The only one there is. There's a lot of reality television out there. And there's been reality television that has tried to take a genre bent. And I'm just going for regular old genre, that you can watch with anybody age 7 to 70. And that is a show that's been running for 12 seasons now called The Repair Shop. It has a relatively simple premise in that people bring busted stuff to them that means something to them. And the people at the repair shop fix it. And the people at the repair shop are, among the leading furniture and clock and soft toy restoration experts across Great Britain. And there's generally a lot of crying and a lot of sentiment and a lot of good feelings. And, you know, sometimes, Jason, I just want to watch a third generation horologist wash clock parts.
I get
sometimes
it.
That's just what I want.
Mm-hmm.
They had a special, where they were visited by the then prince, now King Charles. And so the king had them do some fix up work for him on the cheap, presumably.
Sure.
I mean, technically, mm-hmm. you know, he likes to save a buck. Any place that has a horologist, a ceramicist, a couple of blacksmiths, people who you can bring a toy from the 1800s or a weather vane that has been crumbling atop a church, and watch them receive it back from being sandblasted, or to apply gold leaf to it, or to restuff it, or to restore it in just a way that evokes the way that they remember it, having inherited it from their auntie or their great grandfather or something like that. Just a lovely, gentle bit of TV.
Love it.
In a far less gentle context, I wanted to try to pick, one of a few different kinds of things. On the movie side of things, I recently went and saw the box office sensation, the one and only diva of the screen, Godzilla in Godzilla Minus One, which is its own take on the Godzilla mythos. It's not a continuation. It's not this, but also everything that happened in the original movies, or this, but what happened in Shin Godzilla. It is its own take that picks up in the years following World War II. And does an incredible job of looking at the people who made it out the other side of the war and survived without some of the, I mean, as much as I love the original, there is some of that, you know, isn't it noble to die for your country kind of sentiment, which in the decades since World War II, Japanese culture has definitely moved away from. And I really appreciated caring a lot more about the human beings than the monster. As much as I love the monster, it is supposed to be a force of destruction. And there, you know, there are lessons to be learned. There are, you know, moral truths revealed and everything. There are a couple things that troubled me as I was watching the movie, but to not spoil anything for anybody, I was very satisfied with the way that things resolved.
I hope to
see more from this particular take on the Godzilla world, as much as the legendary monsterverse that they're doing with Monarch and all that kind of stuff is interesting and fun and fine. I think going back to the literal well that this character came from is something that I definitely want to see more of.
I'm gonna put that on my 2024 possible incomparable episodes list.
Oh man, that could be good. Monty, if you had anything to add, I would be remiss if I didn't. Ask you to say something more interesting or articulate than I do.
It is a Godzilla movie about post-war trauma, mm-hmm. more than about guys in rubber suits punching each other in the face, which I like in a Godzilla movie, but it also has a guy in a rubber suit
absolutely wrecking a city.
Yeah. 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 It's all of the things that I like about Godzilla without any of the Godzuki.
All right. So although at the beginning I thought it was Godzuki for a minute.
Yeah, don't turn it off because you think Godzuki has appeared. Just stick with it. And then for my third pick, for a video game, I joined the world of PS5 within the last year. And one of the first things that I did upon getting my PS5 was play the sequel to Jedi Fallen Order, Jedi Survivor, which came out this year. The Star Wars Jedi games, boy, that nomenclature is awkward, follow a guy named Cal Kestis who was just a kid when Order 66 happened. Spoiler alert, Emperor Palpatine killed a bunch of Jedi. These two games represent one of my favorite extensions of Star Wars media since the original movies. It is the kind of you are the protagonist sort of story that is incredibly engaging, and this sequel had a lot to live up to, where you had vestiges of prequel era and Clone Wars stuff mixed into the first one. This one takes place 5 years after that one, and the Imperials are tightening their grip and becoming even more firmly established in the wake of the fall of the Republic. You get to do a bunch of cool stuff, and there are a bunch of great appearances from things that people love, regardless of whether they identify themselves as original trilogy only types, whether they have favorite kinds of droids and side characters and that sort of thing. There's a full-on cantina in this one that becomes a bit of a hub that you keep coming back to. It's real cool, and you get to do a bunch of really fun stuff with the lightsaber and force powers. And for folks who are maybe just getting a PS5 in their house, I recommend both games, frankly. I don't think you would just pick up Survivor without having played Fallen Order. I love it very, very much. I hope Dan has had some opportunity to even consider playing Survivor, but he's been a little busy. I gather.
Yeah.
I did play it. I beat it. It's good.
All right. There you go. Thumbs up.
Oh, I did have a quick...
is this your blurt?
It's my blurt. Okay. One of my favorite things is that we covered a bunch of superhero stuff this year. I guess like a weird combination of stuff. There was Superman, there was Spider-Verse, there was Marvel's, various Marvel things. But I love that early in the year, we did, episode 651, Breakfast Club for Superheroes, and covered Sky High.
Sky High! Yeah.
Where, like Megamind, we're kind of touching on some of this neat stuff that, we didn't cover when it was brand, brand new, but is interesting in context as compared to other stuff. And as my Steve Lutz memorial, thing, because Jason loves hearing Steve say the titles of things, I just think Steve would have enjoyed the fact that we had an episode called MacGuffins and Mechanics right before one called Friendship and Cinnamon Rolls. Mm-hmm. And then later we had one called Fleshy and Gross. So we had three different titles that were compound constructs. And I just think Steve would have thought that.
And
was
you're neat. Right. Steve's voice lives in my head every time an episode title is written. It's just the truth. That's just how it is. I picture what would Steve say.
Jason, so, I have a question for you though.
Yes.
So we finished 7 seasons of Buffy over the course of 7 years.
We did.
What's the next show that we're going to do over the course of almost a decade?
I haven't decided yet. I have some thoughts. I have some various vague thoughts, but I have not committed to it yet. Because it requires us to watch it again, right? And so it's like, well, do I like it enough to put in all that homework time? Well, I'm thinking about
it. So Gunsmoke.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Exactly. Sounds good. The Simpsons, season by season. Oh boy. We'll be here forever. Okay. Thank you, Moises. Moises chose Godzilla Minus One, Star Wars Jedi: Survivor, and of course, All of Repair. Oh, no, the, I no, mean the no, repair no, shop.
Just the repair shop. Just
not the concept of repair.
Don't get it twisted.
Whew, thank goodness. All right.
Because if you get it twisted, it'll have to be repaired somehow. Yeah. The noises owns that.
Oh,
so,
no.
You know.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. We'll be the debating, like, do our medical procedures technically repairs? I don't know. I don't want to even get into it. Thank you, Moises. Chip, it is your turn to tell us things you liked.
Yay. Things I liked.
Things you liked.
Things I liked. Well, one of the things I liked was all of y'all, because the crew of the good ship Incomparable have been very supportive to me as I made a big career change this year. I'm striking off on my own, like many of the folks on this panel. And as I was gearing up to do that, taking advantage of one last hit of salary, I went to Broadway, and so I'm not picking all of Broadway, but right. I did. This was the year that I really did fall in love with Broadway and off-Broadway theater in kind of a big way, by seeing stuff that was recognized but wasn't a big property. You know, it didn't have a Disney name on it. So in 2023, I saw A Strange Loop by Michael R. Jackson. On closing night, I saw Fat Ham, which is a terrific sort of Hamlet parody kind of thing by James Imes. And I saw Anthony Rapp's one-man show, Without You. So 2023 was a big theater year, and I'm hopeful that after that big splash that I'll be able to get back there. So 2023, New York Theater, loved it. A little closer to home, I have to be me, and I have to say the Doctor Who specials. Number two. Yeah. So if you haven't seen Doctor Who, now is the time to jump in on Disney Plus. If you have seen and loved Doctor Who but fell away from it, now is the time to come back. And if you didn't like, if you saw Doctor Who and didn't like the direction it had turned in, and are afraid to come back because a thing you loved you don't love anymore, it's okay. It is safe. And if you loved the RTD years, or if you hated the RTD years, you are exactly getting that, but more, with a Disney budget and a showrunner who has absolutely nothing to prove and is at the top of his game. So this is absolutely the year for Doctor Who. And those three specials with David Tennant and Catherine Tate are an absolute jumping on point, whether it's jumping on or jumping back on.
Well, I'll co-sign that. Absolutely. Good stuff, and new and also nostalgic, and kicking them into their new era. Very nice.
Yeah. And one last thing that I want to mention, it's not quite 2023, but I started picking them up in 2023. I have been on a bit of a decluttering kick, but every once in a while you see some things and you get one, and then you have to get one more, and then you have to get one more. Dan may appreciate this in particular. I have started collecting, not as selectively as I probably should be, the NECA Gargoyles action figures that have been coming out since early 2022 or so. And somehow one has become four, and there's going to be more. Gargoyles was a fantastic Disney afternoon adventure series. It was part of the same time that Batman the Animated Series was on. We've done one or two podcasts about Gargoyles on the network. Adult storytelling, loads of fun. These action figures are incredible. They are very, very good textured representations of these animated figures, and they look great. They're extremely posable. They are they're like the best 40 something 50 something collector action figures, AKA statues, kinds of things. And they're, I also have to give them absolute credit for deviousness in fostering a collector's urge, because these are big action figures with big wings, and they're sometimes a little hard to pose, but some of the other action figures in the line come with folded wings for some of the other characters. So if you want to get Goliath's wings folded and make him easier to pose, you have to get Bronx. And if you want Demona's folded wings, you have to get Xanatos. So I'm just in awe of the absolute raw naked capitalism at play here. But I love these characters and I love these figures. So the NECA Gargoyles action figures in 2023, they became a problem for me.
that's kind of, there's a new line of Batman the Animated Series figures where if you get Batman, Robin, Scarecrow, and Mr. Freeze, you have the components to assemble a Condiment King figure. I love the way they get you like that, because it's always neat stuff. Chip, can I ask you, it sounds really cool, but how does it compare to a toy of a monster cereal mascot, specifically Boo Berry?
I have no idea why you'd ask me that question, Moises.
He's moved on to Gargoyles now. I don't know what you're talking about.
Excellent. Wow. Good choice, Chip.
Good.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
All right. Thank you, Chip. Monty, what did you like in 2023?
What did I like? That's an excellent question, Jason.
Search your thoughts. Consider your feelings.
My feelings are this. People are kind of mad at Taika Waititi lately. They're kind of tired of his whole deal. I liked Taika Waititi's television shows very much. Let's break them down.
Yes, let's.
What We Do in the Shadows. Now, he created the movie. He apparently did nothing on the TV show, leaving it all to Jermaine. And then Jermaine stopped, and now it's whoever works on it.
It's Paul Sims and a couple other people. Paul Sims from News Radio and a couple other people.
Great.
And Flight of the Conchords.
Yeah.
I'm going to get to Flight of the Conchords. Thank you. This is the first television.
Paul Sims was on that, too.
Oh, I see. Right. Carry on.
Yeah. All right.
So What We Do in the Shadows, great television show. Taika created it, stepped away. Might be the good call. Another show that he created and stepped away from, Reservation Dogs.
Yes.
Reservation Dogs is better than The Wire. Reservation Dogs is an excellent television show that takes the lives of these kids in Oklahoma, living on a reservation, and makes it magical. Reservation Dogs is a great, great television show. And again, Taika Waititi, right there at the beginning, he wrote the pilot and then apparently stepped away so that the actual American indigenous people could work on it.
Yes.
Great call, great television show.
I believe it was one of your choices last year.
Could have been.
And I want to thank you, because that combined with my wife also said we got to watch it, and she had watched them by herself, and she said, you know what, I loved it so much, I'll just watch it again. And so we watched it all, because the third and final season was this year. And I remember thinking also, hey, that was one of Monty's picks. Monty was right. So yes,
yay,
you are right. And cosign Reservation Dogs. So good. So good.
Nice. Also, Our Flag Means Death. I think he's not writing this one, but he is starring in it, and he did co-create it. And also, I went back and watched some Flight of the Conchords, a show I really liked when it was on. I still like it. I think Taika Waititi is excellent on television more than he is on movies. Remember The Mandalorian? He was a robot on The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
Pretty good robot, too. Taika Waititi's television work is one thing that I liked this year.
Something else I liked this year appears to have come out in 1623. That's right. The first folio of Shakespeare. So as of course everyone knows.
If you haven't read it, it's new to you, right? I mean, that's fine.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. 3 months ago, I started reading an act of Shakespeare every day. Not just a random act, like I'll go through a play and then go through another play. Good. It's not like, I feel like Hamlet Act 4 today. See what's going on in Denmark.
Yeah.
It's great. I'm really enjoying it. This guy, he's a good writer. And I'm actually picking up some English history, too. Probably not totally accurate English history, but at least I'm getting the basics of, you know, why Henry V thinks he owns France. And why the French keep thinking they own England, and why they keep fighting wars, and, you know, who Hotspur is. Basically, Shakespeare. I'm enjoying it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I even got a replica first folio that's on my dresser right now, open to whatever play I'm currently reading.
Nice.
It feels very pretentious to say out loud, but I really am enjoying it a lot.
When you said you got your hands on a replica, I was thinking, oh man, is Mondi going to talk about Shakespeare-based action figures? Maybe next year.
I mean, I'm sure they exist, but they're going to be really crappy plastic.
Probably.
Accoutrements.
Yeah. Probably. It's too bad.
They're the ones that make the librarian action figure. Right.
The first folio spellings. Totally great. Totally great. Added consonants and vowels where you don't expect them. It's so
Why
fun.
Why not?
Well, because I'm reading Shakespeare, I'm also reading about the first folio because it came out 400 years ago, pretty much this week. Like, they were still compositing it up through November, so I figured December is when it went on sale.
Oh, yes.
And apparently there are 5 different compositors that people have located in it because some people, like, spell do, D-O, but some people spell it D-O-E. The amount of meaningless archival research people have done on every aspect of Shakespeare is very funny to me.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's a whole thing. Yeah, 400 years ago, that's great. Like, gotta love the staying power. 400 years, still got it. Still got it.
He does. And what's great is now I can watch a Shakespeare play whenever I want to, so I can like read it and like, oh, that was fun. Oh. Baz Luhrmann made a movie of this. Mm-hmm. Let's watch that now.
Sure. Why not?
That's a Romeo and Juliet. Yep. Weird movie. And finally, it looks like I saw Babylon January 1st this year, so I'm counting it, and I don't care if I counted it last year. Babylon! Great movie! Babylon!
All right. It's yours. It's just not a draft. I don't even know. I'm just telling you, you can hold on to it. Hold on tight. Thank you, Monty. I appreciate
Babylon.
It. We pre-record this. As you might have guessed, in December. So Monty hadn't seen Babylon in last year's episode.
But only December 31st, just right before the beginning of the year.
Yeah, right.
Jason. Don't
on
break
the
magic.
Edge. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, the illusion. The
Monty
illusion.
Monty said that was 400 years ago this week. He meant last month, obviously, in December. Anyway, thank you, sure. Monty. Dan Morin, what did you like in 2023? The year, last year, 2023, right? Because now, Happy New Year, it's 2024.
Especially talk about things you liked in the last 2 weeks of last year.
Mm. Oh, man, those are the best.
I barely remember them. I have to cast my mind far back to a bygone era. Things were different then. Twitter was a mess. Wait, nope, still happening. All right, what did I like in 2023? Well, let's start with a TV show. A TV show that I started watching the year it came out, which I think was 2021. And we got 2 episodes in, and then we stopped watching it, and a lot of stuff happened. And then eventually this year we decided, you know what, we should start watching that show again. And then we watched all of the first season of that show, and then the entire second season of that show. And that show is Foundation, a show that I was not really sure whether or not I liked, and boy, when I came back to it, it went down easy. I read the Foundation books when I was in, I don't know, junior high school maybe, and I don't really remember them super fondly. The first book is really boring. The second book gets better, but I think they did an admirable job of turning this into something not only like a sensible plot with good characters, but also a show that looks amazing. It is one of the best looking shows on television. And just the expansiveness of the space opera really comes across here. There are some fantastic performances anchoring it from Lee Pace and Jared Harris now I've blanked on the woman who plays Salvor Hardin, who I think is also tremendous. Leah Harvey. Yeah, she is also fantastic. She does a great job. I know a lot of people, you know, say like the second season of that show, like sort of, you know, it does pick up pace wise. I think the first season is also still pretty good. It is a different type of show and it's got kind of a slower burn to it, but watched in a binge, it was still incredibly effective. So I really, really like that. It is not the books, but that's totally fine. It's a TV show. It's a totally different medium. They adapt it. That's the point. So I also particularly want to say, throw in here sort of as an adjunct pick to this, that I also started listening to the Foundation podcast that Apple TV Plus puts out as a companion, which involves interviews, basically David Goyer, who is one of the producers and the showrunner, talking about it with various guests from the show, including actors or people on, like, I think they have the VFX supervisor on, the costume designer, all that. Like, it's really fun. Honestly, I don't usually listen to like official podcasts because sometimes I feel like they're very markety, but David Goyer has some, you know, he's been working in this business for a long time. I really appreciated like listening to the way he broke things down and talked about how they did stuff. And then just some of the production details are hilarious and fascinating because they tell the stories about like, oh yeah, the day we shot that and we, you know, almost drowned Jared Harris. It was really fun. I highly recommend that if you like the show. It added a bunch of interesting details.
Yeah, co-signing on that one, Dan. That was I watched season one and people were hating on it and I was like, I thought it was fine. Season two, I think, is way more than fine. I think it's
It really accelerates.
Really excellent. Yeah.
It's you finish an episode and we'd be like, We could start the next one. We might have finished it. We could start it.
You guys are really selling me on it. I gotta say.
It's good. I dropped off with it and the enthusiasm Dan and others have had for it has gotten me to put it back into my rotation. I think I'm just going to start again from the beginning properly. I hit a lull in the middle of the first season.
Yeah. A lot of people
didn't come back to it.
I did too. I did come back to it, but we were slow on season one and season two is not a problem. Like not a problem.
I fell off in season one.
Yeah. See,
and it was when you guys started saying, you know, season two is really good. And I actually said, is it? Like, yeah, yeah. And that's what got me back into it.
Mm-hmm. I got two words for you, and those words are Hober Mallow.
That's a show where Apple spent a lot of money, and let me tell you, you can see it. It looks great. Good. It is maybe the best looking science fiction show ever made.
Yes.
I mean, I'd really?
Put it up there.
Maybe so.
Yeah. It's
like even more than like the Star Wars shows, and like it's really, they spent a lot of money, but it looks amazing. It looks like a sci-fi novel, right?
Yeah.
Not like a sci-fi movie or TV show, like what a sci-fi imagine. Novel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic stuff. Yeah. So highly recommended. Let's switch gears. I'm trying to think. There's a lot of things I liked.
Dan's going to pick Bargain Hunt for a second pick.
I'm going to pick Book.
Dr. Pimple Popper.
I've picked all books, Jason.
All books.
Yep, books are great. I'm going to pick a book that was a bit of a departure for the author. Instead of focusing in sort of the traditional genres this author has worked in, they decided to do something a little bit offbeat, and they worked, you know, did something with sort of an unconventional narrator, a mystery novel that was kind of a little bit of a different genre, a different experience. And that book is The Dog's Ear Detective by our pal Anthony Johnston.
Oh, yay.
Really great. Like Anthony, we all know Anthony. He's a lovely gentleman and he writes fantastic books. I loved his techno thriller books. The Bridget Sharp series is great. But he decided to take a left turn into cozy mystery. And as with so many other things Anthony does, he totally nails it. I really enjoyed the first book, which involves maybe not retired actress, but an actress who has sort of aged out of, it seems like, getting offered a lot of roles.
Exactly.
And she's dealing with that, but she needs to find sort of gainful employment. She ends up being a dog sitter. And of course she gets embroiled in a mystery, and it's got all the like great, like British mystery hallmarks. It's like a country house estate. There's a wedding going on and mystery, and then a death, and there's the dogs are running around, and there, maybe the dogs are key to this whole mystery. Nothing bad happens to the dogs, as Antony will remind you. And so all of that put together makes a delightful package. I'm glad it has been a success, because I really want to continue reading more. I have read the second book, which is coming out soon, and I can highly recommend it as well. And I look forward to the, I know he's signed up for a couple more, yeah. So I'm looking forward to those as well. Hopefully that series will continue for a good long while.
So Dan, did you intentionally describe that in the exact same way I would describe All Souls Lost by Dan Morin?
Jason, I can neither confirm nor deny that.
This circle of authors is getting a little too chummy, right, if you ask me.
These were both on my long list, yes. If I had a long list.
Nice.
There's somebody who released a book today. I want to join the circle.
All right. David, you always have a long list. Come
David's
on.
Life is a long list, okay?
Yes, exactly.
Takes one to know one, don't you think?
A lot of us have probably read The Dog Sitter Detective. It's so much fun, and it's not just that we know Antony. Like, it is so well done, and like the characters, the details of the main character and the predicament she's in terms of her having lost a parent, but having to deal with the estate and not having the money that she thought she had, and her career issues as an older woman who is not getting the parts as an actor anymore. And then also there is a crime at an estate, and like that is a murder that she solves. And, so, you know, all that's happening. It's great.
I think it's tough to put together a good mystery, and the hallmark of a really great mystery for when I'm reading one is when you get something like half a page before the reveal,
yeah,
because then you feel just clever enough about yourself, but also you're like, you don't know. It's like you find it too early. Yeah, it's boring. Like, yeah. Oh, okay, I figured that was telegraphed so early. But when you're like just a second ahead, you're like, oh, I see what's going to happen. And Antony does that perfectly.
He does.
So well done there. And then for my third one, I'm going to throw out, I'm not always a person to adopt new games, especially on mobile. I struggled a lot with finding games on mobile that I enjoy. And this year in particular, I found a new category of games I enjoy, or I guess I should say I found a new game of categories that I enjoy. Mm. I'm going to pick Connections, which is the New York Times, their latest style of sort of puzzle, word puzzle, where you get a grid of 16 words and you have to put them in four different categories. Yes. I know there's a popular British game show that also uses this format. It doesn't matter. I just want to play the game. I'm not going to get into an argument about that.
That host doesn't know how to ride a bike. I know that for a fact. So
she learned.
Reference acknowledged. Okay.
Now she knows.
But that game has entered daily play for me. I every day, I don't miss it. But what I think what's kind of great about it is that it's also spawned a whole bunch of other sort of people making these style games, including two of our good friends, Lex Friedman and Tony Sidlar. Lex has been making one every day, I think, for the last several months. I think he just hit number 100. And Tony's been making them for a while as well. I enjoy this style of puzzle. It's exactly sort of what I need in the day for, like, you know, it's something I can do in maybe 5 minutes or something like that, and just sort of, you know, makes me bend my brain in ways that are fun and different. And so it goes in with like crosswords and Wordle and stuff like that, where I can just sort of go through my slew of puzzle styles and try a bunch of different things. And I really enjoy it. I think it's very well done. The perfect sort of size puzzle for me to do in a day. So I'm a big fan of that style puzzles, and I'm glad to see that there are, you know, other sources that are, you know, not just New York Times making these, but other people are making them because they're just so enjoy how to put those puzzles together. So as someone who likes puzzles, that's perfect for me.
Nice.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Shelley, it's your turn. What did you like in 2023?
Well, aspirationally, I want to be mad at Chip because his first pick was what I would like to have picked had I seen any theater at all. So not being a person to make resolutions, my resolution for 2024 is to see some live theater. Mm. However, that leads me directly to my first pick, which truthfully, there were two in my head, two TV shows in my head, all throughout listening to these fine picks we've heard so far. And finally, I tipped over, and the one I chose is relevant to the live theater conversation because it brought me delight. It reminded me why I love theater, especially musical theater, why I love performers who, though they may end up on television, really find their home in the musical theater, and just the sort of the gigantism and the outrageousness that musical theater provides when it's done well. And I'm going to pick season two. I'm going to be specific. Season two of Schmigadoon. This season of Schmigadoon, unlike the first, it focused on much more urban and much more modern Broadway shows to spoof and parody and show love for. And the premise is that our leading characters, Keegan-Michael Key and Cecily Strong, are trapped in a place that is like the Chicago of the musical Chicago. In fact, it's called Schmicago. But that is far from the only musical that's referenced.
Oh, man.
Every single episode, every single scene is filled with so many theater references. It is impossible to get them all unless you're maybe David. He probably could get them all, but I miss a few. But in fact, there is a companion. The podcast that I found, it is not an official podcast, but it's a series of YouTube videos by Broadway by Ghostlight, which is the Schmigadoon breakdown. So you can watch this and go, oh my God, I didn't even see that. Some of it is very obvious. And what they do, there's six episodes, and each episode sort of tracks an era of musical theater. And it starts, though, in the 40s or 50s, really, and it goes all the way up through the modern times. And so you have parodies of everything from Hair to Jesus Christ Superstar to Sweeney Todd to, just Chicago, so many. I can't even name them all. And they're so incredibly well done and funny. As I say, it's over the top. A lot of the actors from season one have reappeared as different characters, but there are new people as well. Titus Burgess, particularly as the narrator, is delightful.
He's so good.
Jane Krakowski. Oh my God,
You get to see Jane Krakowski doing her thing.
Yes,
which you never get to see anymore.
I know, so good. And it's just if you have to look for the Easter eggs and appreciate that they're there. And even if you're not a theater person who will see a lot of Easter eggs, if you sort of follow along, you'll enjoy the journey. And as I say, you'll get some musical theater history in the course of it. And it's expected, because I watched the first season and I know there were a lot of sort of, well, it's okay, but I thought it was going to be better for the first season. And so that's kind of where I went with the second season. I was like, this is my thing. I'm going to enjoy it. I'm probably going to enjoy it more than a lot of people, but still I'm not expecting greatness. But I was just bowled over, and I actually want to watch it again because I watched it before I watched the YouTube Broadway by Ghostlight breakdowns. And now that I've seen them, I kind of want to watch the videos again and have it remind me what I should be looking for. But it's so much fun and so good. And I really love Schmigadoon.
Love it.
My second pick is at some point in one of these, I always have to go back to who I am, which is a person who lives in old movie world. However, I have chosen an old movie box set that was released this year. I did one of those last year, but this is a different one. So I enjoy, Kino Lorber has been doing a lot of great re-releases. They don't do the super fancy, they do Blu-rays, but they don't do the super fancy productions like Indicator or Criterion, but they're affordable. And so you end up getting either individuals, movies, or small box sets, maybe three films, that are affordable. They're on Blu-ray. They look good. They're often 2K transfers. So it's not, you know, and sometimes they don't even have, you know, commentary. Sometimes they might have an older commentary, or they might have just a couple of bonus features. But basically, if you're like me and you collect physical media and you want to see movies that have either not been out before or that are in better shape in this release than they have been before, Kino Lorber is your friend. And I've been enjoying their film noir releases for a while. But this year, the thing that was great, that I enjoyed the most, was the Anna Mae Wong box set. Anna Mae Wong is an American actress of Chinese descent, but she was in, she worked in the 20s, 30s, through the 60s. She died in the early 1960s. And she was always cast, of course, as a Chinese person, a character, and often stereotypical. If you watch her on screen, which is difficult to do because there are not a lot of her movies that have been available, which is why this box set is so great, because it's three movies in which she stars. And if you watch her on screen, she's really got an incredibly powerful presence. She's one of those great female stars of the 30s and 40s who you just find magnetic to watch, but there were very few opportunities to watch her. And frankly, she was in movies that weren't particularly great because the movies that she got to be the star of were Potboilers or were, you know, Something Terrible is Going On in Chinatown and she's like Madam Somebody and, you know, is she a good person or is she a bad person? And these Kino Lorber movies themselves are not separate from that. I mean, they're kind of mediocre films, but they are films that star Anna Mae Wong, and it's a great set. There's one called Island of Lost Souls. Let's see, where are the names? I can't find them. Island of Lost Souls, Down in Chinatown.
It's Dangerous to Know, Island of Lost Men, and King of Chinatown.
Thank you. My windows were escaping me because I have lots of windows. And it's a nice set. It looks good. And you get to see her in the starring role. Is she a villain? Is she a good person? I leave it to you. Watch the movies and find out. Thirdly, I almost, in the spirit of Moises picking all of soccer, I almost picked the Apple Music algorithm because it's been good to me this year. And people have lots of criticism of the Apple Music algorithm, but I have been nothing but happy with it. Oddly, the musical item I'm going to pick is not something the algorithm found for me. It's something I kind of went and looked for because the algorithm finds for me the kind of rootsy Americana country folky stuff that I tend to like. And so there are a ton of great albums in those genres from 2023. And I could cheat and name them, but I won't. But, you know where to find me if you want to know what they are, because there are a lot of them. But oddly, the album that I liked the most this year and that I'm pleased to talk about is Olivia Rodrigo's Guts.
She is so good.
Yeah. It's rock and roll, it's ballads, it's young woman who is having a relationship or hookup trouble or whatever. It's very frank and raw. And it's so well written. It's also funny. She's a good writer and she is aware of what she's doing. There are a lot of sort of self-serious younger artists. And so when they sing about things that are not relevant to my life, I'm not very interested in them because they seem to take themselves way too seriously. I don't feel like she does. I feel like she's just got this, you know, she speaks a language of a certain age range of person who is like going out and clubbing and figuring out how to deal with their exes and how people perceive them and in the world. But she is also winking at the listener and she's also rocking hard. So Olivia Rodrigo's Guts, great record. And those are my three.
Yeah, that's good stuff. I've been listening to that the last few weeks. Bad Idea Right, one of the songs of the year. Mm-hmm. Just amazing and hilarious.
Great song.
I'm at that age where I am shocked, and I shouldn't be shocked, that somebody so young can be so smart. She's just doing some incredible stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really, really.
And
so,
and as long as we're mentioning Anna Mae Wong, there's a terrific biography of her that just came out this year called Daughter of the Dragon.
Yes, I need to read that.
Both talks about her film career, but also how hard it was for her to have the film career. Sure. And it is fascinating.
It's great when you talk about these old movies, Shelley. You should do a podcast about it. Oh, wait. You do.
A character based on Anna Mae Wong in Babylon.
That's true. Bringing it back around. I love it.
Bringing it back around.
It's all connected, everybody. It's all connected, people. The jigsaw is falling into place. All right. Thank you, Shelley. Annette, what did you love in 2023?
Okay. So if you listen to me long enough, I'm probably going to bring up a certain individual named Michael Sheen. I am a fan of his. And this year he was in a show with David Tennant called Good Omens. And I really liked season one, but I loved season two, because these two actors playing Aziraphale and Crawley, the demon and the angel, who have, you know, supposed to be enemies, they become friends in season one. In season two, they kind of make this subtext, which we all read into it, where we romantically link these two characters. They start to make it more text, and it was very exciting. And I think, I don't know, the whole season just felt a little more cohesive and funny. It had a lot of good romance, and it really just, it made me very happy to watch these two actors who I think have great chemistry. Whether or not it's romantic, I enjoy watching them on screen together, and it's entertaining. So that is my first pick for this year.
For the people who are like, wait a second, how can there be a second season of Good Omens? The answer is that Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett had an idea for a second book, and they never wrote it, and Terry Pratchett passed away. But Neil Gaiman was like, you know what? I could do that idea as another, actually two seasons, because they're going to do season three. Season two doesn't tell the whole story. And and yeah, it was delightful.
Pretty convenient that this story, that idea that they had years ago, just happens to focus on David Tennant and Michael Sheen. Be a shame if their story idea were about the kids.
Totally. Yeah,
I mean, but I mean, those really are the characters in the first book, though. Anyway,
and he got John Finnemore, who is a terrific British comic writer, to work on these two seasons with him.
Very, very funny writer. Good. Very funny.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Thank you, Annette. What's next?
My next pick is the Barbie movie. Probably also not surprising to anyone.
I left that for you on purpose, Annette. I thought.
Thank you. I was like, I feel like Shelley is the most likely person to pick the Barbie movie. I enjoyed the movie itself. It was just a delightful reenactment of everything I wanted from Barbie in my childhood and me as an adult woman. But I also feel what made it really impactful this year was watching it twice in the theater with all of these people who were just as excited about this movie as I was, and to kind of like be part of the cultural phenomenon that is Barbie was just really fun. And people laughed in all the right places and, you know, teared up at all the right places. And it was just such a communal experience. And I think for the first time since COVID, had that theater experience that I was really missing before that. I'd been to a few movies and stuff, but to go to Barbie in the theater was amazing. And I also, you know, kind of enjoyed the fact that after all the Barbenheimer thing, Barbie just kicked Oppenheimer's butt in the box office, and I felt really smug about it. So, because well, I'm not nice, I just wanted Barbie to win.
Biopic about a weirdo,
right? Right? Or you have Barbie, which was super fun.
He's Knuff. Okay.
Also, Oppenheimer made almost $1 billion at the box office, too. Yeah. So,
I'm not feeling that bad.
It's okay, everybody.
They're not in competition.
They're not. In fact, they are in cooperation, or whatever they call it. They help each other.
Cooperation. That's right.
But Barbenheimer wins. 2023 is what we're knowing here. Barbenheimer.
Probably,
wins.
Yeah. True. My final pick is going to be something that is way different. And before I say that, I just want to shout out Glenn Fleischman for thinking that Terminator was not a thing I was going to like and pick on the time travel draft. Huh. I think of this all the time and it makes me laugh inside. So thank you, Glenn. It's still delightful. In a similar vein, I'm going to pick The Last of Us. That was a TV show that was filmed in my province and in my city. And so I love the show itself. I loved how it was this great zombie. I know it's not like a zombie, but pretty much a zombie movie with so many feelings that like the episode I'm totally blanking on his name, with the two gay characters that
Nick Offerman.
Nick Offerman, thank you. And the, like, yeah, that was an incredible episode that you would not expect from that kind of show. I did not play the game. I've looked at nothing for season two because I don't want to know. So it was all new to me. But there was something also super cathartic about watching them blow up my legislative building with a government that I quite dislike existing inside right now. So just watching them blow that up, deeply satisfying. And I thoroughly enjoyed that.
Nice. Great choice. Definitely one of the TV shows of the year. All right. Thank you, Annette. David, what do you have?
I have three things and a blurt.
Okay.
Which was also a good movie directed by Leonard Nimoy. I will start with a book. It's a little obscure, only because it's a first-time author. It's a first-time imprint. But it's a really interesting murder mystery set in New Orleans. An amateur detective who happens to be a nun named Sister Holiday. And it's a book called Scorched Grace by Margot Duwahi. Duwahi. I had to get that right because it's an interesting spelling. And like all really good mysteries, it looks at the character as much as the mystery. We learn a lot about this nun and why she's a nun and what she thinks of the Catholic Church today, which is kind of interesting because she is not the type of person you would expect, hey, she's going to go be a nun. And meanwhile, someone she knows is murdered. She is just compelled to try and solve this mystery. It's the first in a series, apparently, but it's really good. So Scorched Grace by Margot Duwahi. Also on a mystery vein. There were a lot of really great shows this year, and people who listen to any of the Incomparable shows know some of the shows we love. You know, Star Trek, The Bear, they're all great. But the show that was like appointment TV for me at the beginning of the year was Poker Face.
That was
Ryan
my
Johnson.
Other choice. Mm-hmm. It was Schmigadoon or Poker Face.
Right? Poker Face?
Poker Face. Exactly. I don't even know her face.
On Peacock?
And it is the best, maybe the first variation on Columbo that had nothing to do with Columbo. It's a really smartly designed show. It's not just how's she going to get him. It is how is she going to fit into the mystery? Because there's always something. And they're all really clever. It's so well done. And I don't want to say anything else about it because it's just so good. And yes, I know it's been almost a year and, you know, spoiler warnings, whatever. Just watch it. It's great.
Another very heavy guest star show. If you like to see people pop up that are awesome from other places, Poker Face is a good one for that.
And not necessarily from TV shows, too. Interesting guest characters. My third thing is, yes, from 1967, because while there were a lot of great TV shows this year, this is a show that I have heard about my entire life. I've always been curious about it. My mother told me about watching it, and it has never been available anywhere. It's never going to come out on DVD. But somehow, miraculously, all but one episode have shown up on YouTube. And it's a show called He and She. It was on for one season. It starred Richard Benjamin and Paul Prentice, who are one of those exceptions to the whole thing of married couples who act, who have no chemistry. Oh, they have chemistry to burn. And this show is kind of like the missing link in TV sitcom history. It comes after that whole realm of shows that came out of your show of shows, like the Dick Van Dyke Show and Andy Griffith Show and, you know, all those things that led to That Girl and further on. And then there's sort of like this weird gap in the late 60s. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you have the Mary Tyler Moore Show and the Bob Newhart Show and these very witty, urbane, urban comedies. This is a show that would have fit in perfectly in that schedule. the conventional wisdom is that it didn't do well because it was paired with Green Acres. But I think that's wrong because they both have this weird, surreal, loopy sensibility. I can't think of anything else on the 67 CBS schedule that it would have fit well with. But it's just a delightful show. And is it perfect? No. Is it the greatest thing since sliced bread? No, but you can see the roots of the writers who would go on to create the Mary Tyler Moore Show and the Dick Van Dyke, or the Bob Newhart Show, and then Taxi, and then Cheers, and then Frasier. There's a direct lineage through all of these shows. And you'll see a lot of tropes that became popular in these intelligent shows. If you watch Seinfeld or Mad About You, you'll recognize the skeleton of that in He and She. So it's just fascinating. I've always been curious about it, and I discovered it this year, watched the whole thing. It's great fun. And finally,
67. Oh, blurt away.
My blurt. My favorite single word in all of television this year, Riker.
Okay. Thank you for the blurt.
Yeah.
I'm going to also mention that. So it's my turn, and I will mention this is the not pick. I'm not going to pick Star Trek Strange New Worlds, but we talked about it a lot on various podcasts. It's great. It is. I can't believe that they got it. They figured out how to do a modern Star Trek show and have it the appeal of the old show, but have it be new and modern and great cast and charismatic and good writing and taking chances and it just
and to
like,
cross yeah. over with a cartoon.
It's just wild. So many musical episode crossed over with a cartoon, all sorts of stuff, but I'm not going to pick
And they pulled it off.
I'm going to pick this. See, now I'm breaking my own rules here, but it's the end. I can do that. Here are my three things.
You're the host.
I am going
straight to jail.
I don't care that Barbie made more money because they're all because Barbenheimer is a team. Best movie I saw this year was Oppenheimer. I frequently dislike Christopher Nolan's movies. This movie I thought was like exactly what Christopher Nolan is good at. I thought it was beautiful. I thought it was an amazing work of art. I saw it in 70mm. Really incredible. It was great. I walked out of the movie theater saying that is the best movie I've seen in a very long time. So very impressed by Oppenheimer. Just the flip side. We got Barbenheimer. It was the year of Barbenheimer. They're both in here. It's great. Book-wise, I had two books that I wanted to recommend. One of them I recommended. We actually talked about on a book club episode, which is Mountain in the Sea by Ray Naylor. So I'm not going to mention, I'm only going to mention that, but My Murder I wanted to talk about. Katie Williams wrote a book called My Murder that is being marketed as a mainstream novel. It's one of these mainstream novels that's a lie because it's science fiction and it's actually very competently done science fiction. I get that feeling when I read a science fiction novel sometimes that's being marketed as mainstream of like, do they feel like they're slumming? Do they not know the genre? That happens a lot, right? Where you see some literary fiction writer try to write science fiction. You're like, oh no. Like you're not aware that these are cliches and everybody's already done this. That does not happen in this book. Every page I turn where there was another little detail of the world of My Murder, I nodded and I was like, oh no, she gets it. It is elevator pitch wise. A woman is murdered and resurrected and then tries to solve her murder. That's the elevator pitch. But it turns out she was killed by a serial killer and the other victims were also resurrected and they kind of have a club where they meet and talk, which is super weird. There's a weird virtual reality world that is undergirding this kind of somewhat futuristic but somewhat modern world that it's set in. There is a virtual reality game that is based on the serial killer and their murders, which is also super weird. And as she investigates her murder, as you might expect, there are some real twists about it because she doesn't remember her murder. She remembers a little bit before that when she, I guess her brain was backed up or something, but not, there are missing details. And when she starts to figure out what the details are, everything kind of starts to unravel. I thought it was really great because not only is it a pretty good mystery story with a fun twist that it's her own murder that she's trying to solve, but it
along the way, it talks about social media and how the internet affects people's relationships and how that might be extrapolated into the future with virtual reality. And like, there's lots of really good kind of meaty science fiction premises here that ultimately set up the human story of this character and the characters that are related to her. It just, I don't know. I thought it was really great. And not enough people are talking about My Murder. So there it is, My Murder. And my TV pick is going to be The Bear, because season one of The Bear was great. Season two of The Bear, also great. It is, I just said this for another podcast, but I'll say it here too. It is not a show about a bear. It is not a show about nature. It is not that movie that Leonardo DiCaprio was in where he fought a CGI bear. It's none of those things. There is a bear in the show in the first scene for a moment, but it's like a dream bear. And it's not about a bear. It's about a restaurant in Chicago. And the thing that I would say about it, and actually this is the thing that it's most, in some ways, that it reminds me of Reservation Dogs, is it's a half hour show for the most part. It is a comedy, but also a drama. And both of those shows are about a group of people who are damaged by an event, and actually a death that happens right before the show starts. And you may not even see the hole that it's left in people's lives right away, but as the show goes on, you see just how broken so many of these people are by what happened before the show started. And The Bear also is brilliant in that, like a great streaming TV show, they can just take episodes and say, this episode is going to be about this one side character and he's going to have an adventure and it's just about him. And he's going to go to another restaurant and have an epiphany and learn to be a better person. And then this person, we're going to send him to Copenhagen. And there's a whole episode where the baker goes to Copenhagen. And I'm not being flippant here. It was my favorite episode of TV for the whole year. And then there's the episode everybody talks about where that's like an hour long where the family has the most stressful Christmas dinner ever.
I found that episode stressful.
It is very stressful. That's why I like the one with the baker. The baker is good vibes.
I'd say Forks. Forks for me is maybe the best episode of television I've watched in like 5 years.
Yeah, which
for
is
me.
The, yeah.
Yeah.
It is so lots of really great episodes. If you have not seen The Bear because you're thinking it's about a bear again, or like, what do I care about restaurants, or just trust me here. It's not about a bear. It is great. And you should watch it. It is brilliantly done in season two. I was so relieved because there's that season two thing, right? Where you're like, okay, can they do it again? And the answer is yeah, they can. Also, the music in it is bananas. The musical choices, it's some of the best needle drops you will hear in a modern TV series. It's wild. Lots of Eddie Vedder and Pearl Jam, yeah, but a lot of other stuff in there too. It's really great. Great music in The Bear.
There's an REM song they never play fully, but just comes in briefly as a love theme in season two, and I love it so much.
The score of The Bear often is that they just take a banger of a track and they just play it in the background. That's it.
Yeah.
It's a very, very weird choice, but it's very specific to The Bear. And there's a deep cut album track from Bruce Hornsby that's in one episode. And I'm like, what are they doing here? And it's great. So like, yeah, it's, I don't know. It's wild.
And like Reservation Dogs, it shows you a world that you kind of assume you know, but you don't know it. And it is so authentic. And like Reservation Dogs, it's made by people who have been in the restaurant industry. And it's just devastating and funny and weird. And I love it.
And Ayo Edebiri as Sydney it is a great, very specific performance, really great character. And in some ways, the anchor of the show, because she has a level of, I don't know.
Sanity?
Sanity is the word I was thinking of that many of the other characters lack. And it's really nice. She's like an injection of like, what are you doing in the show?
Level-headedness.
Yes.
What this show is also amazing at, and the thing that I remark upon, is the ability to take characters that you might otherwise dismiss and think of as, oh God, that person is just terrible, or that person is useless. And then give them a moment or like an episode or even a moment where you suddenly realize who, like I'm thinking particularly of Nat's husband, who gets a scene in the last episode of season two, which is heartbreaking and amazing. And like a character who you would otherwise be like, this guy is a punchline in like every other appearance, and incredible writing.
Yeah, it really is. So that is the stuff we liked
for 2023. There's some good stuff. That's a great list. We compiled a fun list for people who are looking for things to consume in 2024 for your own lists. Now, before we go, I'm not going to blurt out other episodes, but I always ask the listeners to send in clips of things that they liked during the year that we did. And if you are an Incomparable member, you can do it in the members Discord. You can do a /best of and do it there. Otherwise, you're going to have to find me on social media or something, or send me an email. I have 7 clips to play, and so I'm going to play them now. We're going to start with something that Annette mentioned before, which was there was a moment in our time travel movies draft where Annette really surprised Glenn.
Director, I never expected this was the film you were going to pick for the first
time. I know,
film.
I knew. Right? Right?
It's a good one.
I do have some romances, but
hardcore. Like, this is absolutely a romance. So I'm not surprised.
It is
at all.
The entire plot is sort of set off by the romance, too. But of course, he was set from the future by the child that they then conceived in the past.
Right.
And
The backbone of this whole movie is romance.
It's all good.
Right.
What
okay.
I'm taking all from right. this is that we should probably do an Agent of Smooch episode about this.
I mean,
at least.
That's great.
I just checked. We've covered the Terminator 3 times on the network so far. You might as well make it 4.
So, we might as well. Okay, challenge accepted.
Okay, good.
We're excellent. Doing a Terminator episode.
Love in the time
soon.
Of Terminators.
And you did, right, Annette?
We did. Yep. Me, Erica, and Deb.
Terminator.
Talked about the Terminator.
It's a romance. That's what one of the things we learned this year. Thanks, Glenn, for pointing that out, right? Like, I mean, we have to thank Glenn for that. I don't love having to thank Glenn, but there...
sometimes
like
you gotta.
You there's an edge in your voice when you said, thank you, Glenn.
Glenn? Well, I don't know.
He knows what he did.
I love Glenn. We love Glenn. Here is one. This is from listener Lexi. She wrote in with incriminating evidence. Now, Erica is not here, but we have this clip that is the incriminating evidence when we were talking about things that people like and don't like. And Erica has opinions, including, as we know from a past episode, that is considered for some by sickos a holiday classic. That our Christmas music episode that Erica despises and Steven, her husband, loves the song Feliz Navidad. We have some evidence that things may be shifting and Lexi clipped it for us.
I also have to bring up another example from member Lexi because she made me laugh. So it was one of the first ones that came in.
It was so
and
good.
This is a special one just for Erica.
Oh,
so her example is the Incomparable's very own Erica Ensign and the Christmas song Feliz Navidad. Okay, I think we're only on the enemy stage so far, but give it time.
No, I don't think I posted it in the members Slack, but I think I posted maybe in the host Slack last Christmas that I was to the point where I didn't mind it nearly as much. So we're on our way.
So Lexi's gonna win this one.
I will say I took a large drink of water right before you said that, and it nearly went very badly.
It's hard not to love something when every time it comes on in the car, your spouse pulls a tiny maraca out of the cigarette lighter place and starts
shaking
it to the song.
That does feel like special circumstances.
Right?
I mean,
yeah. It's.
Oh my gosh, amazing.
Yeah, first thing he did when we got our new car was, okay, where can the tiny maraca go? And he found a perfect door for it. So we're good.
The tiny maraca is working. It's working its magic on Erica very, very slowly. Yeah, so very slowly, Steven's enthusiasm for Feliz Navidad is rubbing off on Erica. Check back in. That was from Agents of Smooch 100. Check back in. It's turning from, you know, it's that classic romance arc, right, Annette? Where they start out hating each other, but they end up loving each other in the end.
Enemies to lovers. Yeah.
Yep, that's how right. it goes.
It's working.
All right. Well, let's stay on Erica for a moment since she's not here to defend herself. But this was set in by our most... technically impressive fan and listener Seb. Now, listener Seb is the one who did all the transcripts of
like, I can't even begin to explain how Listener Seb has used various bits of technology to catalog The Incomparable and other podcasts over the ages. But this one, I think, takes the cake. Anybody who listens to Random Pursuit on the game show will know that Erica has very strong opinions about Trivial Pursuit and what makes a good card and what makes a good set and what makes a bad set. And we all know, like, innately that Erica has these opinions. It took Listener Seb to point out exactly what those opinions are, which was done with the form of a supercut. I'm going to play it for you now.
Is the Friends, the TV series, trivia.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Which is my new least favorite card of the game. It's not necessarily.
Tell us why, Erica. Tell us why.
Okay. It's actually my least favorite edition. I hate it.
All right.
That was excellent. Yes. So, all right. Your six will be the last card on. Oh, my goodness. We have a six and a 12. So we get to start off with my least favorite edition. Sorry. My least favorite edition. And I rolled a 12 and got my least favorite version.
We also have the Trivial Pursuit Millennium Edition, the DVD Pop Culture Edition, and last we have my least favorite, the 20th Anniversary Edition.
All right. That is coming from, 14. My least favorite, the 20th Anniversary Edition. However, right. Actually, you know, after playing all these new ones, maybe this will cease to be my least favorite.
All right. This is coming from the 20th Anniversary Edition of Trivial Pursuit, one of my least favorite editions of all time, one of my least favorites. Ooh. But and it always will be. This is coming from the Trivial Pursuit 20th Anniversary Edition, which used to be my least favorite edition, but others are definitely creeping up on it now. One of my least favorites. This is coming from the Trivial Pursuit 20th Anniversary Edition, which was long my least favorite, but now I have so many and many of them are awful. Well, I didn't know that, so this remains my least favorite edition. This one might actually be my least favorite because TV sounds like it should be so fun, and this sucks. This is coming from the 20th Anniversary Edition, which used to be my least favorite edition. Used to be my least favorite edition, and then I got a bunch more editions and found out there's a ton of bad ones. No longer my least favorite. This one, we are starting off with one of my least favorite editions of all time. This used to be my least favorite. This one is coming from the Star Trek 50th Anniversary Edition, aka, I think, my least favorite edition.
So, I have a theory, which is that Steven tucked a tiny maraca in the 20th Anniversary Edition.
That was a real John Oliver does the, and now this moment.
Right.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't know that I've ever heard Erica so overwhelmingly, powerfully negative about anything.
And yet you can see her heart melting a little bit, well, or at least other things have
risen.
They rose up.
I feel like in her absence, like, to be positive, I'm glad that the world is truly catching up on stuff the way that Erica has wanted people to catch up on Suits for so long. Mm-hmm. I feel like as much hate as she's put on the 20th Anniversary Edition, The Incomparable, by way of Erica, is fully responsible for Suits becoming a massive global hit on Netflix.
Step one, Erica recommends it on the end of year edition. Step two, we reference that the following year. Step three, Netflix. Step four, profit. For them, not
for who?
Us.
Not us.
No, not us.
Hey, are we talking about Profit? I love that show.
All right.
He lives in a box.
He slept in a box.
That's what's going to be coming back in 2 years.
So, this next clip was sent in by listener Stuart. It is from the bootleg. He calls it Shelley Saves the Day. So, Shelley, get ready because you're going to save the day.
I can't wait.
That sounds like an amazing movie from 1943.
And also, you'll see my despair after many years of doing Robot or Not come up in this clip. Here it is. Hey, here's a hot take that will make everybody hate me, but I don't mean it. But I'm just going to say it, which is a chicken nugget sandwich. It's got bread on the outside, meat in the center. It's a sandwich. I've decided that whenever I hear people talk about this stuff, because it's been like 300 episodes of Robot or Not, everybody, we're so very tired. I was actually at the Curling Club, and we were doing volunteer stuff, and people at the next table were doing one of those things. Somebody was going off on, I saw a video on YouTube or whatever about what is a sandwich, and he's like, this is soup and this is a sandwich. It was all nonsense. And I did a little rant at our table that was like, essentially everything is everything at that point. So I was like, beef jerky is a hot dog. Ice cream sandwich is a hot dog. Everything's a hot dog.
Oh, man.
Because
I just couldn't take it anymore.
I like that the moment
cereal
Jason...
is not soup, okay? It's cereal in milk. It's that you could call it a soup, but if somebody brings
if you order soup and somebody brings you cereal,
it is a cold stew.
If you order stew and somebody brings you cereal, you'll be like, "What is your problem?" That
it's
is my
cereal. Wait to hear cereal and find out what you're arguing about.
Shelly, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh,
it's Shelly.
Oh, thank God. See, Shelly was gone and we were waiting
for
her.
That's all I did.
And Shelly came back and I got to stop talking about how everything is a hot dog. Although, I mean,
and that's why I don't remember that at all because I wasn't there.
You weren't there. We were killing time waiting for you to come back from the Superman Returns episode. And I enjoy listening back to that because I kind of think maybe you should live your life like everything's a hot dog. I think maybe life is better that way. Just like, is that thing a hot dog? Yeah, sure, it is. It's all a hot dog. Life is a hot dog. And I want to eat it all night long. I don't know. Always was, Jason.
I knew you were going there.
Yeah, it had to be said. All right, this is a really short one, but it's fun. From Game Show 205, where talk turned ultimately to Monty, actually.
My first thought was fire, because you think like devil, demon, hot, but that's not necessarily the case.
Monty does think devil, demon, hot. Yes.
Yeah. Which is almost
It's a variant of Monty's established, much loved catchphrase. Yeah,
devil, demon, hot. I thought that was a cute little moment that came from listener Steven. Thank you for sending it in. While we're talking about Monty, this might be so. Steve's not here to do his unappreciated joke of the year. I'm going to say that this might be my favorite unappreciated joke of the year. It came from the toy draft, and specifically what happened in the toy draft bootleg. Listener AJ sent this in, and it is a really great moment.
Warner Heisenberg dolls. You touch them in the stomach and they say things.
I'm uncertain. It's uncertain about that. Editor, please keep my joke in and delete David's. Thank you.
Right. just following up, Stephen did indeed follow Monty's advice and keep Monty's joke in and remove David's, and then also remove that comment.
And that elbows. Made me howl laughing listening to the edit.
It
was beautiful.
But listening to him say, editor, keep my joke in, lose David's joke. And then honestly, I didn't know what he did, so I had to go back and check. And indeed, he followed Monty's advice. So this opens a Pandora's box of people just giving Steven orders during the podcast about what to do with the edit. Steven, this is gold. Leave it all
dinner.
In. Yeah.
Steven, insert nice things about the end of time.
I feel like there's a lot of pandering to Steven that already could make a giant supercut.
Yeah, I mean, there may be tiny maracas everywhere in this episode for all we know.
Steven, I have tiny maracas. Please leave my joke in.
One last clip, and this is from listener Dr. Haas. She sent in a clip about how I am a, quote, very polite host. Here it is.
Do I
like it? So
basically,
Jason, this is a great film, and you're wrong to dislike it.
Yeah.
Do I like it? I also can't say that I like it.
I am a very polite host, and I let people say the things that they like, and I think that's great. I think this is a very bad movie, okay? I think it's real bad. I don't think it's bad in context. I think that doesn't help. It's bad. Real bad.
Jason, have the argument on my field of play. This is a great movie in clip form.
Yes. I can go along with you there.
No.
No,
he says no. That was Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, by the way. That
hot pits. Gotta love those hot pits.
Hot pits. Yeah. Good title. One of the best titles of the year. And that was very much like at the end where we're all like, well, here's what's redeeming about it is this, and what's this about this? And I was like, No.
The only redeeming thing about Temple of Doom is that it led to us doing Howard the Duck.
It did. It did. Yeah. And that episode
at the same
is
time,
fun,
I hear
too.
Hesitation in Jason's voice. Was it, though?
No, actually, my hesitation was that I think that episode is also fun, even though I don't like that movie. We made a vow to do Howard the Duck, and we did, and I've seen Howard the Duck again now for the first time since I saw it in the theater. And that was it's a thing that happened. That was not on my favorites of the year, Howard the Duck. Not on my favorites of the year. That, God, believe it or not, everybody, brings us well under the 4-hour mark that these episodes usually are, to the end of our year in review episode. We are going to go. Let me thank my panelists one last time. Moises Chuyon, thank you.
Thanks, Jason. I left various sports for everyone else, and good. No one took them.
Many sports are available. Chip Sutterth, who took New York theater, maybe not all of it, but a lot of it. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Monty Ashley, thank you.
Babylon.
Shakespeare. Dan Morin, thank you.
2024 is off to a great start.
Oh, it's doing great. Doing great. Woo! Shelley Brisbane, thank you.
If you need a day saved, I'm here for you.
Annette Wierster, thank you.
Thanks. I'm off to go watch the Barbie movie again.
Terminator, totally a romance. David J. Lohr, thank you.
My second favorite word in all of TV? Moopsie.
Also good. And thanks to everybody out there for listening. We appreciate you listening in 2023 and hope you will join us for more in 2024 now that it is 2024. We will see you in a little bit. Goodbye.
So, Jason, this end of year best of thing, we have so many years of lore and everything wrapped up in it. I feel like people need something.
Ever since
of
that
a primer.
Radio theater, all the years since then.
Everybody needs a primer for how to survive this as a panelist, as a listener, whatever it is. So, just so that you know, every year of this is something of a selective sequel that we've been doing for something like 10 years or one bullet hole. The goal is always to avoid it feeling like a resurrected corpse, fleshy and gross. At worst, you'll think it was okay. The last thing you want is Jason chained to his desk, editing, shouting into his garage, "The execution kills me!" If we get this one wrong, it could be the penultimate weapon in our arsenal. A few rules of the road. Don't take the Soylent factory tour. Accept in advance that, Fuchs is everyone's dad, and you will finish the night asking, "This show was weird, right?" And before we start, defragment your data and make sure you're ready for the monocle test. As long as you follow these guidelines, you have no reason to fear the bipedal murder robots. Tell you what, though, I'm going to marry that robot lady because she's the sum of all tildes. She has one uncanny plastic head. There's plenty of street parking on the internet superhighway, so don't go having a crisis on infinite parkers. Then you ask yourself, what am I going to bring to the endless slumber party that exists nowhere in time, the one full of people who care about kaiju? It's a kind of breakfast club for superheroes, heroes I never heard of, and you want to come off cool because there could be some possibly shady goings on. So be a better Lando Calrissian. Everybody else, they're all messed up too. I promise you cannot do more harm. And it's fine if you're obnoxiously vegan. If you get self-conscious, imagine that everyone else, you see, they're ducks. Look, no matter what, you know it's going to be a long Zoom with a magical NDA that's infested with love and too much monkey business, whether the memory cheats or not. And everybody there has read and lives the Goth Girl Handbook. They can quote from the book of Bo-Katan, and at least a couple of folks have a cloud atlas of 12 monkeys. So watch out. You might find someone else to team up with, short-selling magic crystals if you're lucky. It'll be replete with MacGuffins and mechanics, friendship and cinnamon rolls, so leave that sad banjo at home, but remember, have phaser will travel in any and all hot pits you may encounter. Because in a world where so many podcasters deep as a puddle, there's a lot of ocean in the incomparable. Fear not in the event things get really weird, because I know a lot of divers. In case you were worried about how to dress, fear not, princesses don't have to wear pink because royalty don't mess around, and pink magic, thanks to Annette, is everywhere. At the end of the night, you will muse, "I guess I like people?" And if anybody makes you feel old by mentioning something that came out before they were born, keep in mind, Max von Sydow was 44.
That's it. That's all of them.
Moises, it was okay.
Can you do a verse as Ken Nordine?